Hare Krishna. Good evening, everyone. We welcome you for the 6-session journey of self-discovery course. Thank you, everyone, for registering. I am Chaitanya Rupadas. I am the coordinator for this course. And I'll be there all throughout. If you need any help, you know, any time during the course, you can always contact me. I'll briefly introduce the speaker for the course. His Grace Shubhvilas Prabhu. He has done his Bachelor of Engineering in Electronics and Telecommunications and worked for Tata Infotech. Later he did his LLB specializing in Intellectual Property Law, and he worked with an international law firm in Bangalore. And then he joined ISKCON as a mentor, and for the last 6 years he counsels, guides students in various colleges like IISc Bangalore, JJ College of Arts, JJ School of Printing Technology, Todamal Sani Engineering College and others. Also, he conducts corporate training programs on leadership, stress management, work-life balance. He has conducted these seminars in companies like Edelweiss, IOCL, MTNL, Blue Cross Laboratories for the top-level management on a regular basis. Also, he conducts regular classes on Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in various parts of Mumbai. He heads a publishing house called Tulsi Books, which produces spiritual and leadership books. So I'll hand over the session to Shubhvilas Prabhu. Thank you very much for joining us.
Hare Krishna. I warmly welcome all of you all to the 6-session Journey of Self-Discovery course. Very interestingly, if you observe the first slide, you know who this person is? It's all of us. It's all of us. And we are on the hot seat right now. We may be sitting in an AC room in the middle of South Bombay, but actually, this is what we are trying to do. We are trying to study ourselves a little deeper, and therefore, this course is called as the Journey of Self-Discovery. You cannot discover yourself unless you take out time and take out a sufficient amount of energy to explore. And you cannot explore or discover too much unless you have the proper guidance. So therefore, what we are trying to do here in the next few sessions is trying to understand ourselves a little better and try to go on a journey of self-discovery. Certain things that we need to keep in mind before we actually begin this session. Today we started at about 7:15, but we will try to keep a protocol of starting every day at about 7 o'clock sharp so that we can end on time. As you will see in the next 6 days, that there is a lot to hear and a lot to understand, and always at the end of the time what we realize is that time is not with us. So I would recommend all of you all that since you all have taken out these 6 days and you want to prioritize these 6 days, try to keep the timing so that we can start off in time and end in time. And one very important thing is that all of us, we are come on an educational tour, and the best part would be, the best way to study would be if we can put our mobiles either off or on silent mode so that we don't disturb our fellow students and we don't disturb ourselves. Sometimes life without a mobile is a very peaceful life. If you can experience that peace at least for 2 hours a day, that will be very fruitful. And also another thing is that as I speak, many of you all will have questions. You know, something popping up your mind. Questions are very important and they have to be clarified. That's the purpose for which we are all here together. I would suggest that whatever questions you all have, kindly jot them down and wait towards the end of the session. After the session is over, we'll be having dinner, a sumptuous feast. But along with the feast, you know, can get your plates and sit inside back And while we are eating, we can have question answers to save on time. And, you know, so that the thought flow is not disturbed, you know, with questions in between. You can note down your questions and keep, you know, I can assure you, you will not go with unanswered questions. And even after, you know, your dinner is over, anybody who wants to sit and discuss more, I'm here. And the most important thing, today is the first day. Registrations will continue till tomorrow. Tomorrow onwards, we will not allow registrations to happen for the simple fact that beyond tomorrow, people will not be able to catch up because too many concepts would have already gone. So therefore, after this course, after the first session, if you all are impressed and if you all would like to call your friends to attend and get benefit of these six sessions, you are most welcome to do so by tomorrow. So this course is a course on the fundamentals of Bhagavad Gita. I would like to mention right on the front that we are not going to cover 18 chapters, 700 verses of the Gita in these six sessions. It is impossible and it is not desirable also. But what we will be doing is that we will draw the essence of the Gita in these six sessions from the practical application point of view and from the point of view of how the whole teaching of the Gita is going to help us and possibly transform our lives. So that is what we will be studying. Of course, just a brief run through on the six sessions. This is like a trailer of what is coming ahead. Day one, we will be studying the search for happiness. This we'll explore in detail today. The second day is called, Does God Exist? This is a haunting question in many people's lives. Does really God exist or no? Of course, many people come to the temple, to the church, to the mosque. But most people come in with a certain amount of blind faith or with a certain amount of hope that God does exist. So we will explore logically whether God exists or no. The third day is called, Who Am I? The Science of the Soul. This session is going to be a very introspective session. And this session, we will study ourselves. Many of you all who are science students, I'm sure if you have studied biology, initially when biology study begins, it is called study of life. But actually what it ends up is studying matter. So we will be studying life in this session. And the fourth session is a very interesting session called One God or Many Gods. India, as we know, is a market house of gods. Practically thousands and thousands and crores of gods we find. And every second day we find somebody new coming up claiming himself to be God. So let us explore on whether there is one God or many gods and we will conclude. The fifth session is by far the most interesting session. It is called, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? When I talk about the six session course to anybody, when they hear this fifth topic, they say, I want to come for the fifth topic. You know, nobody is interested in the other four. But they say, immediately, I want to come for the fifth topic. But then, you cannot, just like if you want to eat a jackfruit, the jackfruit is tasty, the yellow part, but to reach that part, you have to go through layers of skin, which may not be wanted. But to experience the taste of the jackfruit, that's the tapasya. Similarly, if you want to understand this, which is relevant to our lives, you have to hear of the first 4 days. Otherwise, this, if I can give you the answer to this in 1 second, but the answer will seem totally irrelevant at this point in your lives. So therefore, the first 4 days are extremely important. And the last session is called the practical application of Gita in our daily life, which is what we will do is kind of, it'll fit in like a jigsaw puzzle. So what I'm going to do in the next 5 days is that I'm going to throw a lot of puzzles on you. And a lot of pieces will make sense, you know, something here, something there, because we are born in the land of India. We have heard a lot from either the television or from our grandparents, somebody or the other. Some may have also read, hopefully. But you'll find many of these pieces of the puzzle, you know, interesting. But then how to connect all the pieces is what will be done on the sixth day. And everything will fit in place. And then you'll understand how our whole life can be explained in a solid pattern. And then you'll find a picture, right? So that's day six. So today, we will explore this topic on the search for happiness. Is everyone at the back also able to see me? Is everyone able to see me? So, you know, if people are not able to see, I probably have to stand and speak at some point. But if you all are comfortable like this, I can be comfortable also. Okay. So the day one is called the search for happiness. In today's world, everyone is seeking out for happiness. Some way or the other, each one of us in our small way is trying to find happiness. A poor man wants lots of money to be happy. He thinks that's what will make him happy. A rich man, he thinks, if I get a house in a countryside where I'm living with nature in a place like Lonavala or something, I'll be happy. A man who is living in a countryside in Lonavala or something, he thinks, if I come to the city, I'll be happy. So everyone wants happiness, but not in the way that he is having it, in some other way. So this is the nature of today's world. And no one practically is happy in one's current situation. Today's population, the world's population, is about 7 billion people. And if you try to explore what are the goals and aims of these 7 billion people in the world, you know, it'll be a very interesting exercise. Each one will have different roles, different goals in their lives. Somebody would want to have an iPad. Somebody would want to have a Mercedes car, a BMW. Somebody would want to have a jet plane. So many goals. But somebody would like to have good relationships, somebody would like to have a secure life, good insurance. But if you put everything in essence, in one word, everyone would like to be happy. That is the essence of, you know, all the details. There may be 1 million words to explain the details of how one wants to be happy, but the essence is that everybody wants to be happy. And the search for happiness is a very interesting concept. One time, one king, he went to a sadhu, a saintly person, and he asked the saintly person that, how can I find happiness in life? So the saintly person gave him a very interesting answer. He said that you go to your garden and try to catch a butterfly yourself. So the king, you know, he wanted to experience happiness. So he went to the garden and tried to catch a butterfly. He tried his best. After 1 hour of exhausting himself trying to catch a butterfly, he got exhausted, tired, and disappointed, and he fell on the ground and kind of relaxed. Suddenly he saw that the butterfly came flying and landed on his head. Very interesting. All of us are like this king, and we're trying to catch this elusive happiness, which is in the form of a butterfly. And many people have different understandings of how one can be happy. Some say that each one has his own definition and idea of what happiness is. So happiness is ultimately your own perspective. You know, that is, some people, they define happiness like that. It's your perspective. However you choose, you can be happy. Some people say that happiness is available inside you. So don't explore too much. Rather, go deep within and explore the life of silence and peace. You will find happiness. So that is another way of, you know, exploring happiness. Some people say that happiness is available outside. Work very hard, happiness will come to you. So now one person says happiness is available in different people in different perspectives. Somebody says happiness is available inside. Somebody says happiness is available outside. Jesus Christ, he says, seek and you shall find it. And somebody who, you know, may not believe in this concept, he says that stop seeking, because if you seek, you will not find it. So it's a very confusing concept of what actually happiness is and how do we actually attain real happiness in our lives. So that is what we will explore in today's session, trying to find the understanding of what real happiness is. Now, if you want to explore what happiness is, we'll have to go a little more deeper into our lives. And, you know, if you study today's world, I'm going to get into a concept which the Mahabharata explains. This is a very interesting concept the Mahabharata brings out. But to understand that concept, let us divide the whole world, all the species of the world, in two categories: human beings and animals. I'm just kind of broadly dividing. Animals can be, you know, so many: insects, reptiles, mammals, all animals put together. Now, whenever you have categorization of anything in this world, categorization means you will always find there are some common things and there are some differences. Now, I would like to ask you all a question. What do you think is the common thing between a human being and animal? Yeah? The soul. Anybody else? What is the common thing between a human being and animal? Huh? We are alive, okay? Anybody else? Anything common? Huh?
Reproduction.
Yes. Anything else? The desire to live. Okay. Very nice. Anything else? The part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Okay. Anything else? I'm talking about common things between a human being and animal. Yeah. Both want to sleep. Okay. Good. So now I'm going to tell you what the Mahabharata says about the commonality between a human being and animal. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samanya etat pashubir naranam dharmo hi tesham adiko visheshyo dharmena hina pashubi samana. This is a very interesting concept the Mahabharata brings out, which in essence tells what is the common thing between human beings and animals and what is the difference between human beings and animals. If you kind of put everything that all of you all have spoken in four words, the common thing between a human being and animals are sleeping, eating, enjoyment, and defending. This is in essence what is the commonality between the human beings and animals. Now, let us explore and find out how we would like to understand this concept much deeper, and also we will try to relate it to the understanding of happiness in our lives. Now we say that there are so many common things between human beings and animals. The first thing we took up is the concept of sleeping. Now, we may say that the animals, they sleep inside garbage bins, they sleep on top of trees, they sleep under a car, anything and anywhere. Now, these human beings are so different in the way they sleep. You know, I was just reading, in Germany they made a bed, a very interesting type of bed. And this bed, it can help you experience what you cannot experience on a normal bed. What it does: if you get up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and if you want to experience the sunrise, the bed, you know, it is surrounded by glass all sides, and you can actually see a sun rising. If somebody wants to experience a fog, you can actually experience a fog. If somebody wants to experience the fragrance of sweet flowers, you can actually experience the fragrance of sweet flowers. So the bed is programmed in such a way. Now, of course, this bed also You know, if somebody is a very tight sleeper and he wants to get up at a certain time, the bed has ability to inject water in your eyes, you know, straight. And if somebody is even more a deeper sleeper, the bed can eject you out. So this is the concept of sleeping that a human being understands. So you may say that such a sophistication, such an advancement in sleeping. So are we not different from animals? But the essence is what? Sleeping, right? And so much of precious human energy is channelized just to make us sleep, right? It's like we were making some analysis of some really amazing alarm clocks. There's one alarm clock, when the alarm rings, the light goes on, you know, and then when you touch it, it goes off. But then it goes higher towards the ceiling. So, you know, after 10 minutes, it rings again, but then you have to get up a little higher to touch it, right? There's another alarm clock which has eggs in it. And when the alarm rings, all the eggs spill out. And you have to actually collect all the eggs and put them back inside for the alarm to stop ringing. So at least by that time, somebody, you know, gathers the eggs, he's awake. There's another alarm clock which is like a jigsaw puzzle. There's one very interesting alarm clock. They spend millions of US dollars in trying to research this alarm clock. And you know what's the speciality of this alarm clock? This alarm clock falls off your bed and starts running. And you know, and every time it goes in a different direction. So you have to actually, you know, use your intelligence to find it. This is a grenade alarm clock. It actually blasts. And this is one that flies. And there's another very interesting alarm clock. You have to actually squeeze the neck of the alarm clock to make it stop ringing. You know, to release your frustration that you have to get up early in the morning. So, all these concepts are there where so much of human energy, so much of, you know, intelligence is going in for what? To sleep, right? And very interestingly, many people don't get sleep. You know, that's called insomnia. And there are pills made to make these people sleep. So here are some people who, you know, cannot get up in the morning, and there are some people who cannot sleep in the night, right? And the animals, wherever you put them, they go to sleep. So the next common thing between a human being and animal is the concept of eating. If a cat, you know, wants to drink milk, do you think the cat is not having any intelligence to be able to find the source of milk? It has a great amount of reasoning power. It will not enter a kitchen if somebody is inside. But the moment somebody leaves and the kitchen is empty, the cat will go in. Does it not have a reasoning power to find its food? And the common thing between a human being and animal is the concept of eating, definitely. But the animals know what is natural for them. But the human beings try to eat something that is not necessarily natural for them, because they want to eat differently. You know, just like in Singapore, there's a hotel. You know, when you go to a hotel, you know, you generally see the same scenery outside the window. You know, you see the same people all the time. So people get bored. So in Singapore, they made a hotel which is very high in the air, and the hotel rotates. So every moment you're seeing a different scene. But what are you doing while seeing different scenes? Eating. The concept is just the same. The animal may be eating something raw, you know, looking very dirty. But then, what is it ultimately doing? Eating. And something very interesting, you know, there was one friend of ours who had gone to China. And his boss had a secretary, a Chinese lady secretary. And this lady, whenever she wanted to take a break, she would take a sip of monkey blood. And, you know, for her lunch, she would eat roasted snakes. In Burma, there is a very interesting concept of food. You know, they have in every house in Burma, outside the house, they keep a pot. And in that pot, what they do is that whenever any, you know, insect or animal dies in their neighborhood, they put it in the pot and they close it, close the lid. And this pot remains for almost a year. And after the year, whatever rotten, you know, smelly, stinky thing is there, they cook it and they eat it for the remaining part of the year. So now, it may seem that human beings are advanced, you know. We eat pizzas, we eat cakes, we eat so many things. But then, what is the essence? Eating, right? And so much of human energy again is gone into this concept of eating. The next concept is a concept of enjoyment. Basically, this is talking about the concept of sex life. Animals, they enjoy themselves on the street. But the human being, just to experience this concept of enjoyment, so much struggle, so much of emotional disturbances, so much of turmoil to experience this. And most of the times, there are such complexities and such problems in dealings. You never find an animal coming with a heartbreak, right? Never happens. But in human society, always it happens. And animals, they just follow their nature to fulfill the basic bodily demands. But the human beings, they do not just follow their nature, but what they try to do is they try to squeeze out as much pleasure as possible, and in a way which is totally unnatural. And as a result, there is disturbances in the mind, there is disturbances in the emotions, so many diseases, and so much frustration. Why? Because the concept of enjoyment is there. But because we are not satisfied in following the nature's laws in trying to enjoy, but trying to do it in such an artificial way, and in a way which is contradictory to the laws of nature. And therefore, you'll find, you know, this is not just about one type of enjoyment, but even mental enjoyment. You know, you find so many cinemas, you know, there's one enjoyment which is the bodily enjoyment, but then there are mental enjoyments also. Games, you know. One person was telling me that today's teenagers, you know, are not teenagers. They're actually screenagers. They're constantly in front of some screen. Either a laptop screen, iPad screen, mobile screen, some screen or the other. Why? Like, I went to one institute. There's a very famous prestigious institute called BITS Pilani. They have a campus in Goa. And one boy, he was very honestly telling me that, you know, most of the boys who stay in the hostels, they spend about at least a minimum of 8 hours a day playing video games. So much of endeavor the parents have put in to send them to the best institute, and you end up putting so much energy and time and money trying to play games. Why? For this concept of enjoyment. The animals, without any energy and just following the natural laws, they also get the same experience. But we will see later how their experience is sometimes much higher also. And finally, the concept of defending. Animals defend with their teeth, their claws, their horns, and whatever basic facility they have. But a human being, they have missiles, guns, so many things. One person is telling, we have guided missiles in misguided hands, right? You know, we know if you aim a missile, we know precisely where it is going to hit. But the person who is going to press the button, that person's mind is not guided. So therefore, so much of disturbance happens in society today. So, the animals, the difference between human beings and animals use all their intelligence, all their energy, all their focus in achieving these four things. What are the four things? Sleeping, eating, enjoying, and defending. We call it SEED. S-E-E-D. Just remember, this is a short form. Okay? Sleeping, eating, enjoying, and defending. These are the four common things between a human being and an animal. Now, let us explore the differences. In essence, if you want to know how an animal behaves, I'll tell you a story. This is a true incident that happened in our ashram. Some of us had hangers to hang our clothes. And if we would regularly hang our clothes on the rope lines. And slowly, we had about 50, 60 hangers together. Slowly, we were seeing that the hangers were disappearing. We didn't understand where the hangers were going, because none of us were robbing each other's hangers. Just were disappearing. And suddenly one day, we were just observing, we saw a sparrow going towards its nest. And then we saw that this nest of the sparrow was made of our hangers. The sparrow somehow used his intelligence to kind of intertwine all these hangers together and made a cozy nest for itself. Now, if you only explore this, you understand what is the essence of what I'm saying. The animals, they use all their intelligence only for these four things. How to sleep better, how to eat better, how to enjoy better, and how to defend better. But if a human being, with all his intelligence, he only uses intelligence for these four things, then there's a problem. Therefore, let us first try to explore what is the difference between a human being and an animal. Can anybody speak out? What do you think is the difference between human beings and animals? Responsibility, thinking power, emotions, okay? Anything else? Want to study more, reasoning power. Anything else? Ambitions, okay?
Self-realization.
Huh? Self-realization, okay? Anything else? Huh? What is that? Tools, using tools, okay. So, if you try to explore many of your answers, one difference, this is the kind of answers that most people think are the difference between animals and human beings. Reasoning, questioning, thinking, and logical intelligence. But do you think these are the real differences between human beings and animals? Do animals have reasoning power? Yes or no? Huh? Yes, no, maybe. Animals do have reasoning power. Like I was telling you about this cat, unless it can reason why not to enter the kitchen, how will it actually know the difference? It has some reasoning power. It may not be so high, but it does have some reasoning power. The animals have the ability to question. Every day in the morning, when every living entity, be it all of us or be it any animal or bird, wakes up and begins the day with a question. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains this concept. Every living entity begins the day with a question. Animals, typically their question is, will I get my food today? The bird is asking, will I get the worm today? The worm is asking, will the bird catch me today? The human being also has a question every day. Will I get the virar fast today? will my boss not be angry today? So the ability to question is there in everyone. And may not the animals use all their ability to question to only question the four things. Animals do have the ability to think also. And in an ant, if you study the life of an ant, the ant, it knows that it has to prepare for winter and it stores. Grasshopper stores food. Why? Because it can think that I need it in future. Similarly, logical intelligence. Animals do have logical intelligence. If you go to a dog and tell the dog, get out from here. If you shoo it away, the dog will not come back to you. It has some logic, right? But all these animals use all these intelligences only for the seed. How to sleep better, how to eat better, how to enjoy better, and how to defend better. Right? Now then, the main question now is, how are we special as human beings? Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita, the Mahabharata, which I just quoted this verse, it says, Ahara nidra bhayam aito namcha samanya etat pashubir. Samanya etat pashubir naranam. Dharmo hitesho adiko vishesho dharme nahina pashubir samana. Mahabharata says that anyone A human being is special compared to an animal because he has the ability to inquire about the purpose of his life. Ability to inquire about higher aspects of life. So in essence, there are four differences between human beings and animals. A, the ability for higher inquiry. B, the ability to experience bliss. C, the ability to make the right choices. And D is determination. Now, what are the common things between human beings and animals? Seed, S-E-E-D, sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. And what are the differences? A, B, C, D, ability for higher inquiry, bliss, choices and determination. Now, we will explore each one of these in detail. What is the meaning of ability for higher inquiry? Human life is a very rare life. And every human being has this ability to inquire about the purpose of his life. You never find a dog on the street looking up at the stars and thinking, why are there so many stars in the world? You know, just like there's a nice observation, you know, you can commonly see it around. If you go to a butcher shop and just stand outside and observe what is happening, you will get a lot of self-realization. The butcher is busy cutting animals, the throat of different animals. And you will find invariably outside the butcher shop, I don't know why it happens all the time, but somehow or the other it happens. Outside a butcher shop, there is a goat standing. And it is eating grass. Aram se. Without any anxiety, without any fear, without any thought process that, Baba, I am next in line. The difference between my neck and that sword is only 10 minutes. You know, the goat doesn't realize that. Why? Because at present it is happy. That is a problem with animals. They cannot think of anything higher than the present happiness they are experiencing. Right? But the human being is special because he can think and he can analyze. He can understand that, wait a minute, is something ahead of me predictable or unpredictable? If there is any unpredictability, we are there to kind of make the situation right. Why do you think we have insurances? Because every human being has analyzed that the future may not be always as bright as it is now. Similarly, if the human being does not think of why so many things are happening in our lives, why am I suffering, then he is no better than an animal. So, there is a verse in the Vedas which says, Asatoma Sadgamaya, Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya, Mrityoma Amritam Gamaya. Now, just explore what it means. What it says that from darkness, one has to come to light. From a life of temporariness, one has to explore a life of permanence. And one has to explore what is the purpose of one's existence and life. Is it possible that I can have a life of permanent happiness or no? That is what a human life, human being is meant to explore. Just like before that, just to conclude about the higher ability, Siddharth was a king. He eventually became Gautam Buddha. But when he was a king, his father had made a very interesting life for him. When he was born, an astrologer made a prediction. He said, this boy is either going to become the greatest emperor or he's going to become the greatest saint. His father, he wanted to undo the future. And he decided to make a system where this person has no option but to become the greatest emperor. So he created a palace and he created a fort within which there was every possible enjoyment and need of Siddhartha. And he was living inside the palace with the best of opulences, with his wife, who is beautiful like an angel, with everything perfect. One day, he decided to go on a stroll outside the palace. He was never allowed all his life. But when he became a young man, he decided, you know, I want to see something beyond the wall. So he went out with his minister. And then he first saw something very weird, which he has never seen. He asked his minister, what is this? He said, that's an old man. And he has wrinkles all over his face. And he's bent down, stumbling. And Siddhartha, he asked this question, will everyone have to go through this experience? Minister said, of course. Even you will have to experience this. And then he saw somebody who was dead. He saw somebody who was diseased. And then that one experience made Gautam, Siddhartha, conclude that I have to inquire about higher purpose of life. And that gave him a great realization. So we need to explore and we need to use our ability for higher inquiries. The next is a very interesting concept. I'll spend some time on this. This is a concept called bliss. All of us want happiness. But, you know, our understanding of happiness is never a complete understanding or even a partial understanding. I'm going to tell you all some concepts of happiness which probably you have never heard of, right? And I'm also going to tell you all how we can achieve these levels of happiness. Happiness, when it goes to a much higher level, it's called as bliss. And there are four levels of bliss. The first category of bliss is called Parthivaras. Parthivaras means one Parthivaras, it is equal to the amount of pleasure one can experience if two conditions are met. The first condition is that all your senses have to be perfect. That means people with specs not allowed. First condition is that all your senses have to be perfect. And the second condition is that you have to have unlimited resources to enjoy. So if anybody has all his senses perfect and he has unlimited resources to enjoy, then he can experience one Parthivaras. So do you think any of us can experience even one Parthivaras? Impossible. Why? Because none of our senses are complete or perfect. So many defects. The eyes have defects, the ears have defects, the mouth has defects, every sense has defects. And on top of that, we do not even have unlimited resources. Our resources are limited, but our desires are unlimited, right? So we cannot even experience one Parthivaras. Just like, you know, typically this is what happens in society today. There is a rich owner who has unlimited wealth, but he has a digestive problem. So the best of food are cooked, but he cannot eat. The servant is eating paratha with ghee, you know, and with all the opulences are enjoyed by the servant. So the facility is there, but no ability, right? That is the first aspect, which is Parthivaras. So even to experience Parthivaras, we are falling short. What to speak of the higher rasas? Higher than Parthivaras is something called Swargiyaras. So Swargiyaras is equal to 1000 Parthivaras. If you can multiply 1000 times Parthivaras, that is what is experienced as Swargiyaras. So Parthivaras is physical pleasures. Swargiyaras is emotional pleasures. Higher than Swargiyaras is called Brahmanras, which is 10,000 times the Swargiyaras. So Brahmanras is pleasure on an intellectual level, where people use all their intelligence to understand the spirit, you know, absorb themselves on the spiritual platform, and they experience a certain amount of happiness, which is called as Brahmanras. Don't worry if you're not able to understand any of these things. You'll be able to understand these things on day 5. I told you, I'm putting a jigsaw puzzle in front of you all. So right now, especially these two things, Swargiyaras and Brahmanras, you may not be able to, you know, understand what it means. But I can assure you, if you're here till day 5, you'll perfectly understand it and you'll experience that there is something higher also. The highest is called Bhaktiras. And the interesting thing is that, so I said, Parthiva Ras is physical pleasure. Swargiya Ras is emotional pleasure. Brahman Ras is intellectual pleasure. And Bhakti Ras is spiritual pleasure. And it is explained, spiritual pleasure is higher than pleasure at the level of the body, mind and intelligence. And if Bhakti Ras is like an ocean, Brahman Ras is like a drop in that ocean. Now why am I telling you all these things? Is it just to confuse you, or is it to tell you that I know a lot of things? The fact is that this is to just explain to you that the fourth one, Bhakti Ras, which is the highest Ras, highest pleasure one can experience, you can experience it in this world and in the present situation that you all are in. That is why I'm talking about all these rasas. So what is the highest, the greatest amount of happiness can be explored and experienced while we are here if you know how to do it. Therefore, an animal cannot experience any of these four, what to speak of the highest, right? So that is a fundamental difference between a human being and an animal, our ability to experience such a bliss. The third thing is called choice. So animals act by instincts. They have, you know, absolutely no freedom and they have no choice. The cow can only eat grass. If you tell the cow to, you know, for a change, if the cow wants to eat meat, can the cow eat meat? Or if the tiger decides to become a vegetarian, can it even try? It cannot. They don't have choices. They have fixed rules and regulations. But a human being has choices. So the human being has many choices. One of the choices, just like one time there was a man who was, I'll walk around a little bit, just to kind of, if anybody is feeling sleepy or, you know, lost. So there was a man who bought a dog. And very beautiful dog, according to him. He's taking it for a walk. And when he was taking it for a walk, he saw a friend of his. And the friend, he told him, then why are you taking a donkey, you know, for a walk? So this man got very offended. He said, can't you see such a beautiful dog? How dare you say this? This man said that I am not telling you, I am telling your dog this. So the point is, the human being gets very offended if he is called a donkey. But if you call a dog a donkey, it doesn't make any difference, right? So the ability to choose your response is there in a human being, but it is not there in an animal. Just like one time, Buddha was near a pond, near a lake. And one man came to him and he started abusing him. You know, all kinds of bad words. And Gautam Buddha, he just kept quiet. He was, you know, silent. So one friend of his who was watching, he saw and he asked him, that why don't you retaliate? He's telling so many things. So Buddha asked him a very interesting question. He said, suppose I give you 10,000 rupees and you don't take it. Whom will it remain with? He said, with me. So Buddha said that he has given me so many bad words, I have not taken it. Whom will it remain with? With him. So human being is different from an animal because he has the ability to choose his response. And we have options. We can either take up responsibility for our actions, and by taking responsibility for our actions, we can actually transform our lives, or we can let other people's choices or other people's thought process or other people's action determine our options, determine our response. So if we allow others to control our response, then what happens is to that degree, we lose our freedom. So therefore, human beings, one of the fundamental difference between an animal and human being is that the choice. This is called in Sanskrit, the Swatantra Ratna. The choice to make the right decisions. The choice whether to practice spiritual life or no. The choice whether to explore unexplored areas of our life or no. These are choices that only a human being has. Animals cannot choose. That is the third difference. And the fourth difference is D, which is determination. This is determination to do the A, B and C. That means in today's world, the concept in today's world is just do it. What is the meaning of just do it? We hear this so often, just do it. What is the meaning of just do it? Just do it means don't think. Just do it. But that's what the animal does. It just does it because its instincts inspire it to do. But the human being should not just do it. He should think whether it is necessary or not and then do it. So determination is needed to be able to follow the first three. So in essence, what did we see till now? What is the common thing between human beings and animals? Seed. S, sleeping. E, eating. Another E, enjoyment. D, defense. And what is the common thing, differences between humans and animals? A is ability for higher inquiry. B, experiencing bliss. C, make the right choices. And D is determination to follow the A, B and C. Now, this is a speciality between a human being and animal. It gives you an ability. Now, I'm not saying this. This is what the Mahabharata is saying. It says, Ahara nidra bhayamaitunam cha samanya etat pashubir naranam dharmohitesho adiko vishesho dharmena hina pashubir samanam. If a human being doesn't use his potentials of the four A, B, C and D, then what is he? He is called a dvipada pashu. This is a gentlemanly way of putting it in Sanskrit. Polished two-legged animal. Again, I'm not saying this. This is Mahabharata saying it. Now, this most of the times it is explained that if a human being doesn't use his ability in the right way, he becomes even worse than an animal. Let's just analyze why I'm saying that he becomes worse than an animal. Do you think animals eat sleeping pills? You find animals having too much threat, scarcity, heartbreaks, stress management courses, addictions, suicide. Therefore, if these are not happening in an animal society and it is happening in a human society, then where are we heading? Right? Therefore, we need to understand that one has to use the gifts that have been given to us by God in using it for these A, B, C and D. These are gifts that have been given to us. These are potentials of a human being which make him totally different from an animal. And we have to use these gifts and potentials. It's a very interesting story. There was a farmer. And this farmer, he bought a lottery ticket. And he won it. He got 1 crore rupees. And after he got this money, he decided to invest this money on buying a car. He bought a first class BMW car. Whatever it is. He invested all his money in buying the best car. And after he bought the car, he got it to his farm and attached it to a plow and started tilling his land. So is it the right use of the car? Or If the farmer uses his tractor and starts, you know, running on a highway, is that the right use of the tractor? No. Human life is like a first-class sports car. Animal life is like a run-down tractor. If we try to use the sports car in a farm, what happens? Disaster. So if you try to use the human life for the seed, sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending only, then it is like using a first-class car on the field. We may laugh at the farmer, but that's what we are all doing, right? So therefore, one has to learn how to use one's gift. And Arjuna, when he starts, you know, when the Bhagavad Gita starts, chapter 1, he is exploring a lot of his doubts in his mind. And then chapter 2 begins with a very interesting understanding, which is from where Krishna takes over. You know, the first chapter practically Krishna is not speaking at all, not even one word. But from the second chapter, after he speaks this verse, Krishna never stops practically. Of course, in between Arjuna asks questions, but what is this verse? Arjuna, he tells Krishna, Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava prichami tvam dharma samud chetaha. He says, Karpanya dosho. This word is a very interesting word. He says, Karpanya, this word comes from the word Kripana. Kripana means miserly, conjus. You answered GCL? We had a Gita contest. So I was just trying to find out if she answered. So Kripana means a miserly person. There was a man who was a Karorpati. He had unlimited amount of wealth. Unlimited amount of wealth. But he was scared to use even 1 rupee from that unlimited wealth. He would live like a beggar. He had all the wealth, does his own wealth, but he would live like a beggar. Torn clothes, hardly eating anything. And, you know, he was totally happy in this way. Then somebody asked him that you are supposed to be a Karorpati. Why are you living like this? And then, you know, he explained that I'm a miser. I can't spend even 1 rupee. All of us are like that Karorpati. We have unlimited amount of wealth in the form of this human body. But we are not using this wealth. We are using it for the same thing that an animal can use it also. Therefore, we are also Kripana. Therefore, Arjuna tells Krishna, Karpanya dosho pahata svabhava. I am a Kripana, I am a miser. I don't know what my duties are. And he tells Krishna, please explain. That's how the Bhagavad Gita begins. And therefore, you know, when we want to understand the difference between a human being and an animal, in essence, there was a zoo in America where there were a lot of animals, different varieties of animals. And then finally, the last cage in that zoo, it was written, there was a board, the most dangerous animal is here. And inside that cage, there was a mirror. There was a mirror inside the cage. So whoever would look into the mirror, he would see himself. And therefore, the human being is the most dangerous animal. If he doesn't use his propensity to explore his potentials, and rather he uses his propensity only for the seed. And therefore, I would like to congratulate all of you all. You have taken out some amount of your time to explore your potentials. That is what this course is about. Trying to explore what a potential of a human being is. So we have completed the first section, which is how we are special. Now we will go to the essence. I'm going to go a little faster now. So you have to be really attentive to catch. So what is the goal of our life in short? To find happiness. But what is the kind of happiness all of us are looking for? In a sense, the kind of happiness each one of us want is permanent happiness, ever-increasing happiness, happiness which can be shared with the loved ones, and happiness which gives us a variety. So now, if these characteristics are absent in the happiness that you are experiencing, then That happiness is called as relative happiness. So now that brings us to another concept. Now there are two types of happiness. One is a relative happiness and another is real happiness. Now, what is this relative happiness? What is real happiness? I will explain to you. Now, next question is, I'm going to ask all of you all this question. What stops us from becoming happy in one word? We ourselves. Okay, anything else? In one word. Desire. Anything else? Anything else? Expectation? Peace? You're saying something? Knowledge? Anxiety? Okay. In one word, it's problem. Problems stop us from becoming happy. Now, the next question is, there are two types of happiness. To experience relative happiness, it can be experienced by solving relative problems. And to experience real happiness, you have to solve real problems. It seems like I've thrown too many, you know, jargons in front of you all. Real happiness, relative happiness, real problem, relative problem. Now you might wonder, what is happening? You know, are we into some kind of a language study class? We'll explore. What is a relative problem? The definition of a relative problem is this. One man's food is another man's poison. So that means the grass is always green on the other side. You know, you will always find this, that right now I'm happy, but if I had that, then I would be more happy. So this is a problem in human society. One man's food is another man's poison. Just like if a dentist, you know, during this Diwali season, dentists are the most happy people. Why? People have teeth problem, you know, because too many sweets. Now, for a patient who is suffering, is he happy? He is miserable. But the dentist is extremely happy. So one man's food is another man's poison. A man who is very rich and he's living in a hill station, you know, that's a great source of happiness for him because he doesn't stay in this hill station all the time. He only stays in the city but goes to a hill station for enjoyment. But somebody who is staying in the hill station, for him, even if it is the best hill station, it's a source of misery. He thinks, why am I not staying in an advanced city? You know, he wants to come to Bombay. And a person who is staying in Bombay, he knows how miserable Bombay is. He wants to go somewhere else. And if somebody who is in Bombay, he wants to go to US. And somebody who is in US, he wants to go to the moon. So there's no end, right? So the grass always seems green on the other side. Somebody who has, you know, an umbrella shop and is raining very heavily, he's very happy. Why? More customers. And somebody who has a vegetable shop is extremely sad. Why? Nobody will stand and buy. Right? So this is definition of a relative problem. Now, we are coming to the essence of our discussion. What is a real problem? Now, what did I conclude as a definition of real happiness? If you can solve real problems, you can experience real happiness. If you solve relative problems, what will you experience? Relative happiness. That means, if we are interested in relative happiness, then we have to solve the relative problems of life. But if we are interested in real happiness, we have to solve the real problems of life. Now, what is a real problem? I'm going to define it in three sentences. The first definition is, it is common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid it. This is the definition of a real problem. What is it? Common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid it. If any problem in this world satisfies all the three categories, it is common to all, no one wants it, but nobody can avoid it, then it is a real problem. Okay, so let us explore the various problems of this world. So what are the problems of this world? Diabetes. Is it common to all? No. Tension. Is it common to all? Depression. See, tension may be a problem for some, but it's not a problem for all. Fear. Is it common to all? A child who is sleeping in a mother's lap has no fear in the world. Right? At least for that child, there is no fear. It's not common to all. Okay? Okay? So now, let us explore the real problems of life. This is what the scriptures say are the real problems of life. And if we can find solution to the real problems of life, then we can experience real happiness. And if you find solutions to the relative problems of this world, then you can experience relative happiness. So whatever we have quoted as problems in this world, we're all of relative nature. And when we solve those relative problems, you will only experience relative happiness. So therefore, what are the real problems? The first one is birth. When a mother gives birth to a child, it is called as labor pain, not labor pleasure, right? Why? It's a painful process. It's painful for the mother definitely, but it is unlimitedly more painful for the child. When the child is born, you never find a child, you know, smiling with a Sibaka smile and taking birth, right? The child is crying. And in fact, if a child is not crying, the doctor beats the child to make it cry. Because if it is not crying, then you don't understand whether it is actually experiencing pain or no. So birth is a very painful process. Just imagine, you know, inside that door, in the room behind, it's a very congested place. You know, maybe 3 or 4 people can sit there. Now if I put one of you all inside that room for about 9 months, how happy will you be? You know, and I keep throwing something from the hole on top. Miserable. That's exactly the situation in the womb of the mother. 9 months cramped up, and whatever the mother eats, you know, if she eats spicy food, the skin of the child is not developed at that point of time. So, you know, there's only a layer of flesh. When the mother eats pungent food, spicy food, the whole body of the child is burning. But it can't speak, it can't express, but it's suffering like anything. And therefore, you know, there's so many worms and it's a totally dirty environment. That's what birth is about. Therefore, birth is considered to be a real problem. Is it common to all? Yes. Does anybody want it? No one wants it. You may say, oh yeah, it's happy birthday, I want it. But then, if you want it, you have to go through that experience of 9 months. Are you ready? No. And can anyone avoid it? No. So the second real problem of life is called old age. Somebody might say, what if I die young and never become old? You know? So, yeah, many people are there who come to us and tell us, what do you mean by old age? I'll never become old. What if I die young? Old age, the definition of old age is proximity to death. So old age means proximity to death. So whether you're young or whether you're old, therefore na, we say that, you know, even if somebody is 20 years, he says, I'm 20 years old. That means I'm 20 years, you know, closer to the process of death. So therefore, old age is considered to be a disease, to be a problem. And more than anything else, on a physical level, but mostly on an emotional level, it is a painful experience. On a physical level, there is a lot of pain. On an emotional level, there is a lot of loneliness. One time, there was a man who was taking his father to drop him in an old age home. And when they left their house, they were driving down. And on the way, his father felt extremely thirsty. So his son stopped in a park, got down, went to a shop. He took his father and put him on a seat in the park. And he went and got a fruit juice for the father. When the father saw him getting the fruit juice, he started crying tears. So the son, he said, don't worry, dad. They will take good care of you. You know, why are you crying? The father said, I'm not crying because whether they will take good care of me or whether they are putting him in an old age home or no. I'm crying because I remember this place. He said, many years back when I was a young man, when I was dropping my father to an old age home, I stopped exactly here and I brought my father a fruit juice. And he said, the same thing is happening now. The son put the father back and drove him back home. Because when somebody becomes old, the experience of pain is an unlimited experience. Nobody can deny that. One time there was an old lady. This old lady had a heart attack. And you know, she was put into the hospital. And she recovered after a few days. And then she realized that I'm anyway in the hospital and I do a facelift, you know. So she told the doctor that, doctor, why don't you do a facelift for me and make me look young? So the doctor, you know, he operated her and she was looking extremely beautiful. And she walked off. And as soon as she crossed the road, a car banged into her and she died. She went to the heavens and, you know, she started complaining to the God of death. He said, how cruel are you? Why did you do this to me? He said, what did I do? She said, if you had to kill me, you could have killed me before the facelift. I was looking so beautiful, you know. Why did you do this at that time? He said, I never meant to do this to you. But what to do? I couldn't recognize you. So many times, even if you try artificially to do something, you know, to look beautiful, but can you change the concept of old age? You cannot. This is a problem that we have to live with and we have to deal with it. And therefore, it is a real problem. Common to all, no one wants it, nobody can avoid it. The next one is called disease. The word itself, it means dis-ease. Something that puts you in a lack of ease. That is a disease. And, you know, in today's world, this is the most easy one to explain. Every second person has a back problem, you know. And every third person has some, you know, some kind of allergy, some problem or the other. And people get heart attacks when they are 20, 25 years old. You know, just recently, we came to know about a person who is just about 30 years old. He got a massive heart attack. And in fact, the whole pharma industry, the booming pharma industry is a proof, you know, that diseases are rampant. And again, this is something that is common to all. You may say that I don't have it now, but can you say that I can never have it ever? It's common to all. No one wants it, definitely. But again, nobody can avoid it also. And the most important one is the process of death. Death is a, you know, there's a saying which says, as sure as death. That means you can predict, you know, anything based on the fact that the surety can be assured by the process of death. It can never leave anyone. There was a man who wanted to avoid death. So he was a sculptor. So he created 9 images just like himself, exactly looking the same, you know, ditto. And he stood next to it. That became the 10th one. And the God of death came. And, you know, saw 10 people standing, and who should I take? So he thought that he had fooled the God of death. So the God of death, he told him that he just spoke to all of them. He said, in this one, there is a defect. So this person said, impossible. That is it. So you can try your best to avoid death, but you cannot actually. And death is a process that is so painful, and everybody is really fearful of it, right? One time, this was during there was a series of bomb blasts in Bombay. You know, 12 bomb blasts had happened, and that point of time, people were scared of anything. So one of our devotees, he had taken a box of books in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, from one station to another, he was going to take it, but by mistake, he left the box on in the Churchgate station only. And he traveled somewhere else and he realized that I forgot the box. He came running back, you know, almost an hour, and he saw there was a big crowd gathered, you know, around that box. And there were police people with metal detectors and, you know, they're trying to find what is happening. And this devotee came, he lifted the box, put it on his shoulder and walked off. People are so scared of death because this is something, the explanation that the scriptures give about the process of death is that death is a process. It's like the pain at the point of death is like 40,000 scorpions biting at a time. That is a pain that one experiences at the time of death. Because, you know, just like if somebody has an experience of being admitted for a you know, fracture or something like that. They put these spotted bandages, you know, in the hand. These spotted bandages are very, very tough to remove. Because they get so much attached to your skin. I mean, you remove it, it's a really painful process. So death, the time of death is such a time that you are pulled out of something that you love the most. And you have been attached to most for your whole life. You have to give up all that in a matter of few seconds. Very tough. And to handle that, it's very painful. And again, death is something that is common to all. No one wants it, but no one can avoid it, right? So we are trying to find solutions to these real problems. And now, somebody might say, is this all? Unfortunately, no. There are three more. The next one, it is called as Adhyatmik Klesh or Adhyatmik Miseries. These are miseries caused by the body and the mind. So every third person in today's society has to go to a psychiatrist. You know, that means practically every psychiatrist is going to another psychiatrist for treatment, right? So in today's society, the body and the mind are creating such havoc. The people are trying to just kind of come in terms with it. The second type of misery, it is called as Adi Bhautik Klesh. Misery is caused by other living entities. A wife or a husband or a friend or a boss or a mosquito waiting just for you to create a terrible, horrible situation or a project guide for a student. So this is called as Adi Bhautik Miseries, Adi Bhautik Klesh. And people in today's society have become so much disoriented towards trusting each other that, you know, they prefer trusting something like an animal over people, right? There was one man, a very, very rich man. He was, he had gone on a trip to Oman. And while he was on his trip, he got a phone call saying that his son died. So when he got this news from when he was in Oman, he wrote down in his diary, "Today my son died." And after a few months, he was on another trip and he got the news that his dog is extremely sick. He flew the dog from one country to another and he got the dog admitted in the best hospital. It's a true story. And then eventually the dog died. He declared 3 weeks mourning for his whole company. Thousands of employees, 3 weeks off because he's mourning for his dog. And when his son died, one statement in his diary. This is Adi Bhautik Klesh. Because people have lost trust in each other. And the last one, fortunately, is called Adi Devik Klesh. It means misery is caused by natural disturbances. Somehow or the other, you know, there's a nice interesting poem which says, "By the rule, man is a fool. Always, when it's hot, he wants it cool. And when it's cool, he wants it hot. Always wanting what is not." You know? So nature of human being is that always wanting something else, right? And natural disasters are constantly, you know, disorienting us from what we want, right? And these are some things that cannot be avoided. They're common to all. And no one wants it, of course. So these are seven, in a sense. Let's just recap. Birth, old age, death, disease. Four. Then, Adi Atmik Miseries, which is mind and body. Adi Bhautik Miseries, which are by other living entities. And last one is Adi Daivik Miseries, which are miseries caused by natural disturbances. Now, we will go further and we will come to the main subject. How to achieve real happiness? This is what we have come here for. And many people, when they hear all these, you know, seven miseries, they tell us, "Why are you so pessimistic? You know, is there any solution? Or are you only going to tell miseries after miseries?" No. We also provide solutions. And that is what we will discuss now. So, there was a man who had a disease. He had a boil on his hand. You know, somewhere on his hand he had a boil. So he went to a doctor and he told the doctor,
doctor, please help me. The doctor gave him an ointment. He said, apply this ointment wherever you have a boil, it'll go away. So he applied it. In a few days, it vanished. But then the boil came in another place. He went back to the doctor. He asked the doctor, doctor, again a boil came. The doctor said, I given an ointment. Wherever a boil comes, put the ointment. That is my solution. This is called as symptomatic treatment or superficial solution. Not really exploring the real depth. He went to another doctor. The doctor, he said, you are getting boils because your blood is impure. And he gave a blood purifier. And he said, if your blood becomes pure, then naturally, you know, you will not get these boils again and again. So, in this world, the solutions to the problems of life are offered on a symptomatic level, most of the times, and not on a pathological level. So, the solutions that we are offered in society today are on a very superficial level, not really exploring the root of the problem and treating the root of the problem. So today what we will try is to explore what is the root of the problem and how we can solve that. So therefore, I want to know what is the difference between a painkiller and a medicine. What is a painkiller? Yeah. So the painkiller, it gives a superficial relief from the pain of the disease. But the medicine, it actually cures the disease from the root. So what are the advantages of a painkiller? Instant relief. Cheap and easily available. What are the disadvantages of painkiller? Side effects. No permanent cure. And it can make the disease worse. Right? And what we are being offered in today's society is three kinds of painkillers. These are three superficial solutions that society is giving to us to solve the problems of our life. We'll explore these three painkillers. The first one is called scientific advancement in sense gratification. The second one is called as speculation. And the third one is called as superficial religion. The speculation, the second one, can also be known as mental trick, right? So we'll explore each of these and how we will see that these are superficial solutions which really don't address the root of the problem and doesn't touch the real problem at all. So the first one is called sense gratification. If you study an ostrich, this is how typically an ostrich behaves. You know, whenever there is a problem, you know, when there's an attack on an ostrich, the ostrich deals with the attack in a very interesting way. It digs a hole on the ground and puts his head inside the hole. For the ostrich, the problem doesn't exist anymore. But is the problem gone away? No. The problem is very much there. But he doesn't have the means to tackle the problem. And today's society is very much encouraging us to become an ostrich. When there's a real problem coming in front of us, birth, death, old age, disease, adhyatmik, adhibodhik, adhidevik, klesh, how you deal with it? Fancy gadgets. What are you talking about problems? We have such nice iPads and iPods and iPhones and so many things. What problem are you talking about? Just absorb yourself in these gadgets. We have the best of the entertainment and media industry giving you the best of entertainment. We have the best of foods. We have the Facebook. You can make friends all over the world. A neighbor is sitting and becoming friends through Facebook. Unfortunately, in today's society, science and material advancement is giving us so much, but relationships are not becoming stable, you know. And you know, so many other possibilities. Somebody says that, you know, if you want to overcome all your problems, drink. You can take drugs. Now the question is, is material advancement actually giving us solutions to the real problems of life? If you explore, it's not. Is birth stopping Are we able to stop the process of death? Are we able to stop the process of old age? Stop the process of disease? Stop the problems of the mind and the body? Stop the problems of natural disturbances? No. What we are doing actually is just symptomatically covering our eyes with beautiful gadgets, with the best of the entertainment industry, with the best of the foods, thinking that while I'm absorbed in this, the problems don't exist. This is just like an ostrich putting its head under the ground. For what? Thinking that the problem doesn't exist. But do you think if you just hide away from the reality, is the reality going to stop? Are the real problems going to stop? No. So therefore, very funny thing. In 1990, people were thin and the TVs were fat. Now, the TVs are extremely thin, but people are extremely fat. So the question is material advancement actually providing real solutions to the problem? The advantages of material advancement are huge amount of information, quick communication, global connectivity. But the disadvantages are health issues, impersonalism, and pornography. The age of cell phones, always available, easy connection, speed, no privacy, health issues, stress. So every solution that comes with it a package of problems. In the previous times, people would find that, you know, we're traveling in low speeds, bullock carts, you know, so many dirty roads, you know, cow dung all around. The speeds are very low. But now, the speeds are very high. The roads are very clean, but the lungs are very dirty. You know, externally, everything seems to be first class clean, but internally, everybody becoming more and more dirty. Previously, we would have, you know, we would take long time to reach destinations. Now we have aeroplanes. But to reach the airport, it takes unlimited more time, right? And, you know, therefore, whenever we find that there is an advancement that is happening, we also have to see what are the side effects for that advancement. And, you know, we find that there are medicines which are, you know, made for curing the disease, but unlimited amount of side effects that come along with the medicines. One interesting disease which has come up recently is called as a mad cow disease. Now, we may have heard of what this mad cow disease is, but if you study how it actually originated, you'll be shocked actually. The problem in society is that, you know, people want abundant amount of milk. Now, how to get unlimited milk is a problem. So science explored and found a solution to the problem. They realized that if a cow is fed food mixed with the bones of calves, then the production of milk is much higher. Scientific exploration. And they did that. And the cows that ate those bones, they got this disease called mad cow disease. And then they started acting completely crazy. And human beings who were eating the flesh of those cows, they got the disease in turn. So now you try to create a solution to a problem, but then it created a problem that kind of unlimitedly magnified what you're providing solution for. Mobile phone was so that communication can be effective, but along with that comes cancer. To solve cancer, they found that there's an earphone. If you put an earphone in the ears and use a mobile phone, cancer is less. But then they realized after making the earphone that the earphone acts as a conduct, as an antenna, which takes the radiation straight into your ears. You know, so you are previously radiation from outside. Now the radiation is right inside your ears. Then another solution came up. They found air tube earphones, right? So this is the latest invention. You know, earphone which says that absolutely radiation free. Wait and watch. So every solution that material advancement is providing us is leading to another problem. But the main question is the material advancement providing solutions to the real problems of life? Yes, it does. But it only gives a temporary relief. It is not a permanent solution. And in fact, it gives rise to bigger problems. People in today's world are so much impressed with the external razzle dazzle of society, and the mind is completely absorbed in those razzle dazzle, that they forget to explore what the real problems are and find real solutions to these problems. Just like, you know, if somebody has white hair, the solution is you have a hair dye. If somebody has, you know, wrinkled skin, solution is that you have a facelift. If somebody has body, you know, pain, solution is painkillers. So you find that anything that comes up in society, we are trying to find an immediate solution. But then what we don't realize is that the repercussions of that immediate solution. And, you know, just like there was one young man who saw a very beautiful girl on the street. And he started following her, you know. And he followed her and reached her house. She climbed up her house and he went to the opposite building to see her more. So he saw through the window and he saw something very interesting. So when she went into the house, she removed her high heels. And she became like almost half the size. And then a little later, she removed her facelift. She removed her goggles. Her eyes were sunken into the socket practically. Black. She removed her facelift. Wrinkled, you know. She removed her wig. White hair. And then she turned around. She was a 60-year-old woman. So this man was shocked completely. So many times, this is what material advancement is doing. That it kind of covers. It does a perfect patchwork. And completely hides, puts a covering over the real problems. So that we don't experience the real problems at all. In fact, so that we don't have the time to experience, time to think about the real problems. Because we're so busy enjoying all the creations of this world. Therefore, you know, one man, just to kind of, on a lighter note, one man, he was a lawyer. Lawyers can be quite dangerous. Of course, I'm also a lawyer. So one man, he was a lawyer, he died. And he went to Yamaraj, the superintendent of death. And he asked the Lord of Death that, why did you bring me here? And your laws are much inferior to our laws in this world. So Yamaraj asked him, how? He said, you know, whenever we want to summon somebody to the court, we give him three warnings. You know, at least three warnings are given. So without three warnings, nobody is summoned to the court just like that. And you just picked me up and got me, you know, without any summons. So Yamaraj said, what to speak of three warnings? I give you unlimited warnings. He said, I gave you one warning. I made your hair white. And then you covered it up with a hair dye. And then he said, you know, I wanted to make it more emphatic and a clear summon. So I made you bald. Then you put a wig on it. And then he said, I want to make it more emphatic. I removed your teeth and you put dentures. So he said, I've given you unlimited summons. I'm tired of it now. So I picked you up. So many times, nature gives us a lot of, you know, hints and directions. But unfortunately, we are so absorbed in the razzle dazzle of society that we are not hearing those hints. And therefore, what we are doing today is self-exploration. We have taken our time from the razzle dazzle of society, come into a place where we can sit and explore ourselves and try to find solutions to the problems that we are facing. The second solution that the world offers us, it is called as speculation or mental tricks. There are many mental tricks that the world offers us today. First thing, positive thinking. You know, you find so many people giving seminars, think positive. And the best thing with positive thinking is that it gives you a motivation in life. But then just imagine you have a map in your hand, okay, and you want to reach a certain destination, but you have the wrong map and you're trying to reach the destination with the wrong map, and you are telling yourself, think positive, you will get it, you will find a destination, think positive, and you're exploring. What is the use of positive thinking when you have the wrong map in your hand? So in today's world, positive thinking is good. But if you know where to go, but if you don't know where to go, what is the use of thinking positively, right? So therefore, positive thinking is a problem also. And it is a solution that the world is offering us, unfortunately. Second thing is called self-help books. These are available by the millions. People devour them by the hundreds. Very good. These self-help books, they help people to get rid of, you know, an anxiety-ridden lifestyle, or it helps to deal with stress. So many things. But can these self-help books help us explore and solve the real problems of life? No. The third thing is called laughter therapy. Many people say that come together and laugh and all the problems of your life will be solved. And there was one man who was in extreme amount of depression. And in his depression, he went to a doctor, a psychiatrist. And he asked the psychiatrist that, kindly, you know, help me come out of the depression. It's too much on me. So the psychiatrist, he suggested that I have a solution to give you. If you're so depressed, I can give you medicines. But he said, better than medicines, I'll give you a solution. He said, there's a circus close by. And whenever I'm depressed, I go to the circus. And I see the clown and I forget all my depression. So this man, he said, I am that clown. So many times we find that something that we are promoting as a solution to other people's problems may not solve our own problems. Why? Because it is such a superficial solution. And the next one is called neuro-linguistic programming. You know, this is a very interesting type of concept where you are programmed to think, to come up, you know, to remove certain areas from your life. You know, just like we are programmed to think in a certain language. You know, I think in English. So if somebody tells me gajar, I interpret it as carrot. You know, if somebody tells me something else, I interpret in a different language, I interpret it in English. I think in English. Similarly, other different people have thoughts in different languages. So you can program yourself to think in a certain way. And there are certain things that are unwanted in life. So this neuro-linguistic programming will help you get rid of those, you know, unwanted part of life. But how much ever you get rid of the unwanted part in your thought process, can you solve the real problems? No. Then there is something called forum, or there's something called anonymous societies, you know, like Alcoholic Anonymous. And all these societies, the way they function, I'll tell you the essence. The essence is that they believe in the strength of people, strength of coming together. You come together and you can achieve any purpose. Just like Alcoholic Anonymous. Their strength is the association coming together. Now, even if the whole American army, whole Indian army comes together, the best of association, the most powerful association, can you solve the problem of death, old age, birth and disease? Impossible. Can you handle one natural disaster? If a tsunami comes, the only thing that you can do, even the best army, is run. Right? Therefore, again, this is not a solution. And also is recommended yoga and meditation. Yoga and meditation in and of itself is very good because it can help you handle your life in a very peaceful way. It can help you relieve yourself from stress. But yoga and meditation by itself cannot help you solve the real problems of life. So now the third one, which is the one that puts most intellectual people off, is superficial religious rituals, where people claim that, you know, actually people say that the solutions to all the problems of life is if you do some ritual, you know. If you do this ritual for this much amount of money, then your problems will be solved in life. If you go to in the local trains, or if you go around Bombay, you'll find so many posters put up. This Baba is here to solve this problem of life, you know. Only 100 rupees, all problems of life are solved, right? So therefore, these are again very, very superficial ways of dealing with the problems of life. You'll find so many TV channels, the Aastha channel, you know, so many people giving lectures. It seems to be such a great way of advancing in life. But actually, most people who see these lectures or who watch these serials, they are watching it with a certain aspiration in their heart. If I watch this, if I hear this, then maybe this problem of my life will be solved. And in fact, Even the speaker, people who speak, they promote it in that way only. Yeah? Like one time, there was a man who went to a Bhagavat Sapta, and the speaker, you know, he was speaking, and there were, you know, hundreds of people sitting in the audience. And after a certain amount of time, he saw that there was one man who was constantly crying. So he felt, wow, he's so attentive, and you know, he likes my lecture so much. He's touched. So after the lecture was over, he went and asked him, that what aspect of my lecture made you cry? He said, I remembered my goat when I saw you. He said, your beard reminded me of my goat who died some time back. So the person who is speaking has certain aspirations. The person who is hearing has certain aspirations. They don't connect actually. And unfortunately, because it is such a superficial religious ritual, the essence is lost. People don't know why they are doing it. So, you know, therefore, when intellectual people are, you know, told to do this ritual, they get completely put off because they don't relate to it. It doesn't logically fit into their paradigm. And unfortunately, this is promoted as a solution to problems of life. So, again, you know, people go on different yatras, you know. Transformation is unfortunately misunderstood as transportation, you know. Transportation means going from one place to another, you know, different yatras to holy places. But actually what happens in these yatras or these holy visits is only you're physically going from one place to another. But within your heart, how much transformation is happening? Therefore, sitting in one place, your heart can transform if the right knowledge comes. And going to unlimited places, your heart will not transform if it is on a superficial level. Therefore, the third solution, which is a superficial solution, is superficial religious rituals, which again just put some person off. In today's society, like one man, he was driving on a highway, 200 kilometers per hour. Somebody stopped him and he asked him, where are you going? He said, you stupid person, why are you disturbing me? Let me just go. He said, where are you going? He said, I don't know, I want to go. And he drove off. Many times in life, this is what happens to most of us. We want to go at full speed somewhere, we don't know where. And unfortunately, we're not even ready to accept it. In today's society, it's called as a rat race. Whether you are winning the rat race or losing the rat race, you continue to remain a rat. So therefore, we need to take out time to understand what direction is my life going in. And if you have speed without direction, that can create a greater disaster. Better you go slow, right? If you don't have direction. And if you have speed with direction, the faster you go, the faster you reach a destination. So therefore, the understanding of life has to be from this perspective. Now, we have explored so many things. In essence, what we have explored is we have seen the human beings and animals. There are four common things and four differences. The differences are our potentials. Seed is the common things and ABCD is the differences. And if you use our differences, which are the potentials of human being, to explore, then one can actually, you know, stand much apart from the animals. And then we saw that if somebody has to experience happiness in his life, he has to solve the problems of his life. We saw problems are of two natures, relative problems and real problems. We saw real problems are birth, death, old age and disease, adhyatmik, adhibaudhik and adhidevik miseries. And we are now trying to explore that, you know, of course, we also saw that society gives us superficial solutions to solve the problems of our life. And with superficial solutions, we are not able to even handle or even come close to the real problems, tackling the real problems. But what we are doing is that we're just having a superficial experience of pleasure or experience of, you know, going in the direction of problem solution, but it's actually not solving the problem. So therefore, what is the permanent solution? I'll tell you a story. It's a very interesting story. Be very attentive to the details of this story. There was a very, very big millionaire and he had a son. And they had gone to a mela. And in that mela, the son got lost. This man tried to search for him everywhere. He couldn't find him. And then he returned back home. In the meanwhile, the son started crying. He was trying to explore, but he's not able to find his father. Then he sat down in one place. So one man, he came to him and he asked this boy that, you know, why are you crying so much? So this boy, he said that I'm crying because I've lost my father. So this man, he said, wait a minute, I will solve your problem. He went and came back with a big bag. He gave him an iPhone. And then he gave him a laptop. And then he gave him a Mercedes car. And then he gave him, you know, an iPad. And then he gave him the best food to eat, Pizza Hut. And then he got the best drink. And then he said, don't you experience happiness now? The boy said, yeah, of course I'm happy. 10 minutes. And then again, he started crying. Why? That was not what he was looking for. Another man came after some time and he told this boy that you will find your father. Think positively. If you think positively, you will find your father. And he gave a big pep talk on how to think positive in life. And he went away. This boy was happy. 10 minutes. Then he started crying again. A third person came and he said, I will find the solution to problems of your life. And he said, let us do a yajna. So he sat down and he lit a big fire and he did an elaborate fire sacrifice. And then he went away. He said, you will find your father soon. 10 minutes. Again, this boy started crying. A fourth man came and he said, I will help you. He took this boy, dropped him at his house and went back. The boy never cried. The three kinds of painkillers in society are, the first one, the person who came first, gave him food, clothing and shelter, is scientific advancement in sense gratification. This is a painkiller. It is not addressing the real problems of life. It is only giving a superficial solution. 10 minutes. After that, you are, you know, crying. The second person who came, who said you can do it, and he gave him a pep talk, that is speculation. Mental trick. It can give you some amount of, you know, confidence in your life. Very, very essential also many times. But again, that is not the real solution. The third person who came, who did some kind of yajna, is superficial rituals. And the fourth person who gave a real solution is the one who took him back to his real father. Now, what is a permanent solution? Back to the real father. Now, it leads to us to a very ambiguous area, which we will explore also. But before that, I want to tell you all something very interesting. All of us are searching for the right thing. What is it? Happiness. But in the wrong place. There was a man who had a diamond ring. Somehow he, you know, dropped his ring somewhere in the street and he started searching for that diamond ring very badly. And while searching for the diamond ring, he found another friend of his. He said, what are you doing? He said, I'm searching for a diamond ring. He said, you're a fool. You'll never find the diamond ring here. His fellow asked him, why? He said, there is no light over here. You come with me. He took him to another place and there was a sufficient amount of light over there. He said, search here, you'll find it. There's a lot of light. So both of them continued searching for 1 hour. Did they find the diamond ring? No. Why? Because it fell somewhere else. Right? So, it is explained that we are trying to search for the right thing. Now, another very interesting story. If things in this world can give us happiness, then the richest man would have been the most happy man. Right? Like, for example, Mr. Boeing, he is the owner of the Boeing flights. One point of time, an interviewer was interviewing him. This Mr. Boeing had a strange problem, strange disease. We started 10 minutes, 15 minutes late, so I'm just going to go another 5 more minutes. Is that fine? So Mr. Boeing, he had a very strange disease. And this disease was that whenever he would go to answer nature's call, whenever you go past urine, he would experience a tremendous pain because he had a urinary tract infection. Tremendous amount of pain. He was the richest man in the world practically. And one interviewer interviewed him. He asked him a very simple question. He asked him, "What are you thinking right now?" This man said, "This man is one who has everything anyone could aspire for in this world and more probably." He said, "The only thing at this point of time I'm thinking is when will I go to answer nature's call again? Because when I go, I'm going to experience an excruciating amount of pain, and I'm just, that's the only thing in my mind now." So things in this world can never give us happiness. One man, he had a lot of balloons, you know, and he was, you know, whenever he would want to attract kids, he would release one balloon. Balloon would fly in the air. So one kid came running to him and he asked him, "Will the black balloon also fly like the others?" He said, "Of course." And this boy became extremely happy. And this man gave an explanation. He said, "Whether the balloon will fly or not, it doesn't depend on its external color. It depends on what is inside." So happiness doesn't depend on what things we have. It depends on what is within. And if we can bring that what is within outside, we'll experience a great amount of happiness. And as far as what is the wrong place, I said we are exploring the right thing. We're trying to search for the right thing, but in the wrong place. Now, what is the wrong place? I'm going to ask you all some questions. This is a quiz, okay? So what is the place where people go to eat? Restaurant. What do you call it in Hindi? Bhojanalay. What is the place where people go to drink? Hindi. Madhuralay. What is the place where people go to study? Vidyalay. What is the place where people go to read books? Pustakalay. Now, what is this world called in Bhagavad Gita? This world in Bhagavad Gita, this is a certificate of Krishna. He calls this world as Dukkalay. Alay means a place. And Dukk means miserable place. So this world is certified as Dukkalay. And what are we trying to find here? Happiness. So we're trying to find the right thing, but in the wrong place. And the next question is, if this is the wrong place, is there a right place? And for there to be a right place, there has to be some other world. There has to be a spiritual world. But for there to be a spiritual world, there has to be God. Now, that's where I stop today. I'm not going to tell you all whether God exists or no. That I'll tell you all tomorrow. But today, we just concluded our session by, we'll just summarize everything. And then all of you all can go for prasad. And I'm here to answer questions. And, you know, all of you all can be comfortable and happy to ask as many questions as you all want. And I'll try my best to answer them. So we'll just summarize everything in short and then we will wind up. So we saw that the human beings and animals, there are four common things. What are the four common things? Sleeping, eating, enjoying and defending. This is called seed. There are four differences between human beings and animals. A, ability for, higher inquiry. B, bliss. C, choice. And D, determination. Determination for what? To follow the A, B and C. And then we saw that why we are not able to experience happiness? Because there are problems. And we saw that there are two types of problems. Relative problems and real problems. And we saw the definition of relative problem is, anybody? One man's food is another man's poison. That's a relative problem. And the definition of real problem, three. Common to all, no one wants it, and no one can avoid it. This is the definition of what a real problem is. And then we saw, what are the real problems? Seven. First, birth, old age, disease, death. Then, adhyatmic. That is, what is adhyatmic? Problems of the body and mind. What is the second one? Adhibhautik. What is it? Other living entities. And then third one is adhidaivik, natural disturbances. The seven in number. And then we saw that we have three solutions, which are temporary solutions or symptomatic solutions. What are the three solutions the world is offering us? First one is scientific advancement in sense gratification is offered as a solution. That means they say that problems, forget all the problems. Just enjoy yourself, absorb yourself in these facilities that we are providing you. The second one, which is a supervised solution, is speculation, or it is called a mental trick, and which are so many number, neuro-linguistic programming and positive thinking, self-help books, so many of them. And then the third one is superficial religious rituals, which actually are not really addressing the real problem, but they're just kind of giving a superficial patchwork. And then finally, we concluded by saying that all of us are trying to aspire for real happiness, but we're searching for the right thing in the wrong place. Now, we said that this is the wrong place. We are trying to achieve happiness. Things in this world cannot give us happiness. That's right. I give the example of the balloon. I give example of so many people who have unlimited but still are not happy. But what can give us happiness is the inner contentment within the heart. And if we can explore our inner potentials, which are the difference between a human being and an animal, the potentials of a human being. And the second part is that we're trying to search for it in the wrong place. Now, what is the wrong place? Krishna certifies this world as Dukkhalaya, a place which is full of misery. And that means, on the outset itself, we are telling you, when we leave this hall, it's not that we are going to guarantee you happiness. But what we are guaranteeing you is, if you are ready to practice a process, which we will tell you, you will experience what? Not just happiness, but you'll experience bliss. Bliss is what we're talking about. You remember the four levels of Parthivaras, Jad, Swargiras, Brahman Ras, and Bhakti Ras. We're talking about that. So it's not that we are telling you that, there's no happiness over here. That's it. Seminar over. It's not like that. We are telling you there's no happiness in this world, but we are also going to reveal to you a process by which you can experience bliss in this world. In Dukkhalaya, that is called a bylaw. There are certain laws and there is something called a bylaw. If somebody knows a legal language, laws are something that everyone can see. But a bylaw is something only a person who has made the law can see. That is what Bhagavad Gita is. Right? So we are trying to explore the bylaws of nature. So thank you very much. And now we can, if somebody has any quick questions, we can take up. And of course, while we are having the question answers, we can make your plates and come back inside and sit. And I'm going to continue answering questions. And anybody who has a question, just raise up your hand. You can ask and we'll answer. Hare Krishna. So tomorrow we will, of course, now after taking prasad, please make sure you'll come back inside the room only, so that, even if you don't